chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are rest make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to the Secret Truth. First, we're going to play an update of the President Trump's condition. He's at Walter Reed Medical Center, and he's being treated for COVID-19. So here we have an update of the physician's report on President Trump's condition. Here we go now.
Extremely grateful for the enormous outpouring of support and prayers that the whole world and country have been providing and sharing. I'd like to thank Colonel Andrew Barr and all the medical and support staff here at Walter Reed for their tireless efforts, providing everything and anything the medical team, the President, and I could need. This morning, the President is doing very well. Behind me are some of the members of the President's medical team, whom I'd like to introduce. Dr. Sean Dooley, pulmonary critical care. Dr. Brian Garibaldi, pulmonary critical care. Dr. Robert Browning, pulmonary critical care. Dr. Jason Blaylock, infectious disease. Dr. Wes Campbell, infectious disease. Dr. John Hodgson, anesthesia. Major Kurt Klein, Army nurse. Commander Megan Nasworthy, Navy nurse. Lieutenant Juliana Lavopa, Navy nurse. Lieutenant Commander John Shea, clinical pharmacist. And not present with us are Lieutenant Beth Carter, Lieutenant Maureen Meehan, both Navy nurses, and Dr. Jesse Schoenow, director of our executive medicine program. As reported yesterday, consultation with this group, I recommended we bring the President up to Walter Reed as a precautionary measure to provide state-of-the-art monitoring and any care that he may need. Just 72 hours into the diagnosis now, the first week of COVID, and in particular days 7 to 10, are the most critical in determining the likely course of this illness. At this time, the team and I are extremely happy with the progress the President has made. Thursday, he had a mild cough and some nasal congestion, and fatigue, all of which are now resolving and improving. At this time, I'd like to bring up Dr. Dooley to discuss some of the specifics of the President's care.
Thank you, and good afternoon. I'm Dr. Sean Dooley, as Dr. Connolly mentioned. I'll start off by mentioning how incredibly proud I am of our medical team assembled behind me and the honor it's been to care for the President over these last 24 hours here at Walter Reed. He's receiving outstanding multidisciplinary care, the state of the science for coronavirus infection. We are monitoring him very closely for any evidence of complications from either the coronavirus illness or the therapies that we are prescribing to make him better. We have monitored his cardiac function, his kidney function, his liver function, all of those are normal. And the President this morning is not on oxygen, not having difficulty breathing or walking around the White House medical unit upstairs. He's in exceptionally good spirits. And in fact, as we were completing our multidisciplinary rounds this morning, the quote he left us with was, "I feel like I could walk out of here today." And that was a very encouraging comment from the President. Moving forward, I'll go ahead and introduce Dr. Garibaldi, who will talk about some of our therapeutics and the plan of care for today. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Dooley, and I'd like to echo the sentiment from the entire team. What a honor and a privilege it is to be part of this multidisciplinary unit to care for the President. About 48 hours ago, the President received a special antibody therapy directed against the coronavirus, and we're working very closely with the company to monitor him in terms of that outcome. Yesterday evening, he received his first dose of IV remdesivir, and our plan is to continue a 5-day treatment course for remdesivir. And the big plan for today, since he's in such great spirits and doing well, is to encourage him to eat, to drink, to stay hydrated, to be up out of bed, and to be working and doing the things that he needs to do to get well. I'll refer Dr. Connolly to any questions.
Thanks, Brian. It's important to note the president's been fever-free for over 24 hours. We remain cautiously optimistic, but he's doing great. With that, one other note. It should be clear that he's got plenty of work to get done from the chief of staff, and he's doing it. With that, if there's a couple questions about the president's health in the last couple days.
Sir, could you tell us the president's oxygen saturation level, please?
Yeah, so the last saturation that we had up walking around, he was about 96%.
He's receiving no, he has not received any supplemental oxygen?
He's not on oxygen right now, that's right.
He has not received any at all?
He's not needed any this morning, today at all. That's right.
Do you have an estimated date when he might be discharged?
Well, I don't want to put a hard date on that. He's doing so well, but with a known course of the illness, day 7 to 10, we get really concerned about the inflammatory phase 2. Given that we provided some of these advanced therapy so early in the course, a little bit earlier than most of the patients we know and follow, it's hard to tell where he is on that course. And so every day we're evaluating, does he need to be here? What does he need? And where is he going?
Is the probability that he will need supplemental oxygen going forward?
I don't want to put a percentage on that, but right now all indicators are that that he'll remain off of oxygen going forward.
And in terms of like blood clots, pneumonia, bacterial infection, what do you see as the risk on that front?
Well, we know that all of them are risks associated with this condition. He is receiving all of the standard of care and beyond. Per routine, international COVID protocols. So we're monitoring for all of that, but at the moment, there's no cause for concern.
You said he's fever-free now. What was his fever when he had one, sir?
I'd rather not give any specific numbers, but he did have a fever Thursday into Friday, and since Friday morning, he's had none.
Okay. And what was the date on top of the other antibodies?
I'm sorry?
Why remdesivir on top of the antibodies?
So remdesivir works a little bit differently than the antibodies. We're maximizing all aspects of his care, attacking this virus, a multi-pronged approach. As the president, I didn't want to hold anything back. If there was any possibility that it would add value to his care and expedite his return, I wanted to take it. And the team agreed, and that's where we proceeded.
Doctor, what was the date of the president's last negative test?
I'm not going to get into all the testing going back, but he and all the staff routinely are tested, and so.
Doctor, what is the PPE protocol for President Trump receiving visitors and doctors?
It's the same as any hospital has. We have an area that's that clean that you put your equipment on, and then beyond that, everybody is fully gowned up, masked, gloves. We're protecting ourselves and him.
Have you done a screen? Has there been any sign of any lung damage whatsoever?
We are following all of that. We do daily ultrasounds. We do daily lab work. The team is tracking all of that.
Has there been any sign of damage?
I'm not going to go into specifics on what the findings of any of that are.
If we just put you down on one thing, has he ever been on supplemental oxygen?
Right now, he is not on oxygen.
I know you keep saying right now, but should we read into the fact that he had been previously?
Yesterday and today, he was not on oxygen.
So he has not been on it during his COVID treatment.
He's not on oxygen right now.
Has hydroxychloroquine been considered as a viable treatment option for the president?
We discussed it. He asked about it. He's not on it now.
And doctor, what symptoms? Has he also experienced difficulty breathing?
No, he has not. Never did. He had a little cough. He had the fever. More than anything, he's felt run down.
Who is handling contact tracing? Is that the White House or CDC?
The White House White House Medical Unit, in conjunction with in collaboration with CDC and local, state, and health departments, are conducting all contact tracing per CDC guidelines.
When was the positive diagnosis made? You said 72 hours. That would put it at Wednesday.
Yeah, so Thursday afternoon, following the news of a close contact, is when we repeated testing and given kind of clinical indications at a little bit more concern. And that's when late that night, we got the PCR confirmation that he was.
Is there any clarity on how he became infected?
Not going to go into that. As far as his care, it's irrelevant.
Well, when he became infected?
Yeah, we're not going to go into that. We're just tracking his clinical course and providing the best care we can.
Will President Trump have to stay at Walter Reed to get the 5-day remdesivir treatment?
We've discussed that right now. If he needs all 5 days, that will likely be the course. But again, every day we're reviewing with the team his needs for being here. And as soon as he gets to the point where it's not a requirement, he may still need some care, but if we can provide that downtown at the house, then we will transition at that point, as long as it's safe and appropriate and the team agrees.
In addition to his weight, does he have any other risk factors that make him more at risk for sort of a severe case?
Well, not particularly. I mean, he's 74, he's male, and he is slightly overweight. Other than that, he's very healthy. His cholesterol is great, his blood pressure is great, he's not on medication for that. He's up and active. You saw his activity, the days leading up to, the long hours and everything else. Now he's able to handle it.
Can you provide other vitals like heart rate, blood pressure, and temperature?
So his heart rate is in the 70s to 80s. His blood pressure has remained where it's historically been during our physicals. 110 to 120 systolic, he's great. It's never budged. I've had no concerns there.
So why was the decision made to transfer him here?
Because he's the President of the United States.
And obviously, if doctors have found that the prone position is helpful for COVID, has he been in that at all?
No, he asked about that. He did, Thursday into Friday. He's been briefed by the task force and all the scientists for months, and he brought that up, as we were discussing his cough, and at that time his oxygen levels were okay, and we didn't feel like we needed to do it. We came up here, we discussed it with the team as well. We consider all options, but he has not needed any of that.
Why wasn't the First Lady admitted as well?
The First Lady's doing great, thanks for asking. She has no indication for hospitalization, advanced therapy. She's convalescing at home. Thank you.
I'm going to try to pin you down one more time. I know you said there's no oxygen.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah. Yeah, he's not on oxygen today.
Did he receive any on Thursday?
And he's, what's today, Saturday?
It's Saturday.
No, Thursday.
Okay, so no Thursday, no Friday, no Saturday. That's fine.
So
that was why we were confused.
Thursday, no oxygen, none at this moment. Yeah, and yesterday with the team, while we were all here, he was not on oxygen.
So has the president actually been admitted as a patient to this hospital?
The president is a patient at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center.
Is he on any steroids?
Yes.
We want to hope and pray that our president comes through this, because some people are advocating that this could be an attack on the president. And in these days and times with the division in this country, anything could happen. We've got Tom Fenton come up with Judicial Watch, which is explaining a little bit of the latest information they have about Hillary and so forth, and some emails that possibly implicate her in starting this whole investigation against Trump about the Russians. So here we go with Tom Fenton.
Next up. So we had this revelation from the Office of Director of National Intelligence. I forgot to pull it up, so I'm going to have to go by memory here. John Ratcliffe is the president's nominee who was confirmed. You remember Rick Grenell was there for a few months as an acting head of the ODNI, and Mr. Grenell, he was former ambassador to Germany for the president. He went, as I said, on a transparency tear and released a lot of information and did a significant house cleaning in the Office of Director of National Intelligence. John Ratcliffe has been trying to follow through by pushing for more transparency on the Obamagate scandal, the worst government corruption scandal in American history. And he confirmed our theory of the case. What's been our theory of the case, you might ask? Our theory of the case is that the Russiagate smears were a knowing lie by the Hillary Clinton and Obama gang to distract the public and freeze the justice system from going after Hillary Clinton for any crimes associated with her email use and the evidence of crimes in her email, such as pay to play and other things like that. Sure enough, it turns out they had intelligence that the Russians thought and had information that was the plan. The Russians knew that Hillary was making it up to keep herself out of jail and distract the public from that issue. Not only was that, it wasn't just like, oh, this, it wasn't like the fake Russia dossier. It was actionable intelligence. It was so actionable that John Brennan briefed Barack Obama about it in 2016. It was so actionable that it was referred to the James Comey and Peter Strzok of the FBI in September of 2016. And as you know, they covered that all up, and there's no evidence they seriously investigated it. And it was quite obvious to everyone that's what the scam was. They were trying to freeze the Justice Department, freeze the public from looking at Hillary Clinton. And you got to hand it to them. They've been successful, haven't they? Other than Judicial Watch, I've been telling you this forever. It's been about Hillary Clinton. Russia's been about Hillary Clinton. And in part Obama, because he was in on it. Obama knew there was no basis for what Hillary was up to. He was given an intelligence briefing suggesting it was all a lie. And of course, all the information they were getting about the dossier contemporaneously further confirmed it was a lie, because none of it was checking out. And they knew, in fact, that the guy pushing it was a Russian spy, as I discussed last week. Yet they still worked with him. They coordinated still with the Clinton campaign, even though they knew she was working with a Russian spy. So when the president calls it treasonous, I think he's right, but I'm sure you agree. And right now, Judicial Watch is the only one in court trying to hold Hillary Clinton accountable over her emails, and we're being opposed by the Justice Department and the State Department. And this information that they've been sitting on, which evidently was opposed for release by the CIA, I suspect by the Justice Department as well, given our experience, they've known about since the get-go. And you can bet John Durham, as soon as he got in, knew about this. And nothing's been done. Nothing's been done. And I know you get frustrated, and I get frustrated as well. So what is it we can do? All we can do is what we can do. All we can do is get the information out, and all John Ratcliffe can do in some ways is get the information out, since he can't prosecute anyone. And hopefully that results in increased pressure for real justice and accountability in the criminal court process, in the criminal legal process. But I've been saying time and time again, I don't want to say I told you so, but what's frustrating is that we've all known, as outside observers looking at documents that we were able to get over the objections of the deep state, that this was all a ruse. That was being used to protect Hillary Clinton. And now we know they knew it too. Of course, we kind of knew that too, right? Because none of it was checking out. So I don't know what Durham's doing, but as you know, Judicial Watch is not going to wait for Durham. We continue our litigation. We're appealing the Hillary Clinton testimony issue. We're getting documents and pushing on what the corrupt FBI was up to, what the corrupt State Department was up to. We're getting disclosures that Congress can't get, that the media is uninterested in getting. So it's just great work by Judicial Watch. But it's frustrating because now we have further confirmation that there was a treasonous coup and malicious, seditious conspiracy against President Trump. And we need justice for it. We need justice for it. And I don't know who's going to win in a month, but Judicial Watch ain't going to stop. And we're not going to stop because I know we have your support. And I know you want us to do it, right? You want us to keep on pursuing what we're able to do through the courts. And we thank you for your support of our work in that regard. And you can bet we'll continue to push it. Whether or not it's a President Trump or a President Biden. And frankly, in some ways, the Justice Department has been no different between Republican and Democrat administrations. So our work really just doesn't change. We just keep on plowing along. Keep on doing all the heavy lifting, as I say. So thank you for your support, and we'll be back here next week with another Judicial Watch Weekly Update.
The corruption is becoming evident. I think Tom Fenton was frustrated in the Department of Justice not being any more aggressive with all this evidence out here. And next we have an update on General Flynn. Here is his attorney making quite an effort. And here we go with what occurred in the last hearing and her frustrations in trying to get justice for General Flynn. Here we go next.
Joining us now by phone, Sidney Powell. She is General Michael Flynn's attorney, former federal prosecutor, filing a motion today to dismiss. Sid, it's great to have you with us on the broadcast. Tell us the basis of the motion to dismiss now, and I'm afraid we all have a sense, at least, of why it's necessary, and also, amazingly, that it is necessary at all, given what has become a phenomenon in the court system in Washington, D.C.
Yes. Well, the government originally moved to dismiss the case on May 7th with a 100-page filing that included 80 pages of exculpatory evidence not previously produced to the defense, and that shows General Flynn is innocent. There was no crime ever by him, and the government made up the basis to, quote, investigate him and everything else, and falsified the 302 report of their interview of him. So it's been a disaster from the get-go. It never should have been brought as a prosecution, much less an investigation. And now we have an additional 40 pages of documents just produced to us late last night by the government, finally pried out of the FBI, extricated like trying to pull a wisdom tooth, apparently. And it shows even more evidence that the agents knew they were making it up, to the point that they sought professional liability insurance for themselves, realizing they would be sued if anybody ever found this. They made a comment about, boy, if this is ever FOIA'd, meaning produced under the Freedom of Information Act, there are going to be an awful lot of questions to answer. I mean, it's one comment after the other that shows they knew they were playing games with General Flynn's life, and they did that and have done that for 4 years.
Well, you know, I guess the expression correctly here again, when we talk about the politically corrupt FBI and the Justice Department and what they have done to General Flynn, his family, is damn their hides. The fact that one agent texted effectively an admission that he had a conscience, he just had overcome it, is certainly insufficient. What is to be done now? You can't get justice in that court system in D.C. The appellate court is rigged. They're political skunks. They've got the whole system rigged. They would just as soon crush General Flynn's life and that of his family as sit upon their little perches with black robes. They are an outrage. They are a disgrace to the nation. What in the world are we to do?
Well, Judge Sullivan's going to have to dismiss this case with prejudice. If he doesn't, the Supreme Court will, because it's an absolute appalling travesty of justice. And the court has only exacerbated it by its baseless and unprecedented rulings.
Unprecedented rulings, and knowing full well that all they were doing was continue to persecute General Flynn and his family, and to do so that he was an innocent man from the very beginning. And do you know what else? Sidney, I'd like to get your opinion on this. I really think the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice, should be ashamed of himself for letting this go on as it has. I think it's, again, it's outrageous what he has permitted. And there's no way to hold him accountable. But I have to say, I think so little of this man now, it's impossible to express. Your thoughts?
Well, there is a Judicial Ethics Commission and a way to seek and file grievances against federal judges. In fact, any member of the public can do it. And there may be plenty of reason to do that coming up, if not already.
Yeah, does not the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court have the capacity, the power, and the authority, and indeed the responsibility to reach into a court when it is serving everything but justice?
Well, generally, as Justice Ginsburg wrote in a unanimous decision for the Supreme Court just a week or so before Judge Sullivan started this abusive process, judges are not supposed to sally forth looking for wrongs to right. They wait for the litigants to bring the issues to them. So if Judge Sullivan doesn't grant this motion to dismiss with prejudice, as must be done according to all existing legal precedent, we will take it immediately to the Supreme Court.
Cindy Powell, it's great to have you with us. We thank you so much, and we wish you, of course, the best of luck and all the best to General Flynn, his family, and...
Well, it seems like today that this corruption is, they stick it in your face, whether it's in the courts or outside the courts or whatever. Coming up next is Patrick Hawley, interviewed by Alex, and they get into corruption in Harris County in Texas. And Paxton, the state attorney general, is bringing cases against these people now. So here we go with Patrick Hawley.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. Look, I mean, I think we all knew in the back of our heads as soon as the coronavirus scandemic started that this was going to be about vote by mail. We started seeing the rollout coming from the Clintons, coming from Stacey Abrams, who we had already contended with back in 2018 in the overtime period down in Georgia where she was ballot harvesting. And they were running a campaign-style operation in Georgia back then to try to get votes, to find these votes, find the provisional ballots. Of course, you had people who weren't registered. You had illegal immigrants, people who didn't live in the county, voting in Fulton County, right? There are these kinds of counties. Now, in Texas, the great state of Texas, Harris County is that county. And so there's a huge effort underway that I'm plugged into and that we're reporting exclusively at National File to expose this massive voter fraud ring that's been going on for years. This investigation is what led to Attorney General Ken Paxton filing 134 felony charges against four defendants for vote by mail. This is the biggest bust of voter fraud ever in history, and now there are new developments. I got the scoop on two affidavits that were filed yesterday at the Texas Supreme Court from private investigators, including a former top FBI agent, stating what is in this investigation, video evidence, documentation, everything else, which is part of a criminal probe right now. So this is in the hands of Ken Paxton. This is in the hands of the Texas Secretary of State. We're rolling it out in a way that doesn't damage the criminal investigation because we want these criminal charges going into the contested election scenario. But what they have revealed is absolutely shocking, and it confirms everything that we've known and that we've been saying. I'll just read a quick passage from one of these affidavits. Witnesses have shown me and described to me how the ballot harvest take absentee ballots from the elderly in nursing homes, from the homeless, and from unsuspecting residences' mailboxes. The ballot harvesters then complete the ballots for their preferred candidate and forge the signature of the voter. Two witnesses stated to me that there are two individuals employed at the Harris County Clerk's Office who are aware of the illegal ballots and help facilitate and mask the processing of the ballots into the legal stream of ballots. Now, we've already published a video showing them going into a nursing home in 2018 and doing this, having the old people just put an X on
ballots. You were on a month ago saying this was coming. You guys have broke that. That's exactly what Ilhan Omar's doing. It's what Governor Cuomo's doing. This is the Democrat. They're doing it in Broward County. They go in and ballot harvest, which is illegal in most areas.
Yes, that's right. And by the way, there's an old person who was denied food until they agreed to vote for the person that the nursing home attendant wanted them to vote for. The nursing homes are in on this. And so when you have Harris County sending out these ballot applications to everybody in the county who's 65 and over, that means the nursing homes are still ground zero.
Sure, that's a bunch of leftists. That's where they chose to kill everybody to get the COVID numbers up. But I just heard the record skip there. Boy, I want the interview with that person. I'm offering $10,000 for the interview. I believe it because they admit they do that to their areas. They beat them up if they don't. That they literally won't give them food unless they vote for Democrats. God, these people are sick.
Yep, that's right. And now we know that the Biden campaign's Texas political director is named in these affidavits. The Biden campaign is named in this in one of these affidavits. So we know that, and I was told in no uncertain terms, this is going on during the 2020 presidential election. Texas started mailing out the absentee ballots.
Of course
10 days
it is.
Ago.
All the stuff they did in Iowa and everything was a beta test.
Yep. So this is an absolute definitive link between Dallas Jones, the recently hired Texas political director for the Joe Biden Kamala Harris campaign, and this massive Harris County operation, which ensnares a lot of Democrats. Sheila Jackson Lee employing convicted forgers on her campaign effort. So the Democrats in Texas in the Houston area are as sleazy as they can get. And they honestly thought they could flip Texas in Houston by finding all these votes. We're on to it. And over the next 5.5 weeks, we're not going to let them get away with it.
Well, election fraud is legendary in Texas and Illinois and other states, but I love my state, but it's true. Democrats, going back to LBJ bragging about Box 13 and all that, I mean, they're well known for doing this.
Yep, absolutely right. And, you know, LBJ was a hard-knuckle politician. There was maybe some things to admire about him, like when he said that his opponent was, you know, fornicating with a dog, and then he said, you know, make him deny it. But obviously, you know, the Democrats are just as sleazy as it gets. They're getting sleazier. And now what they're doing is they're operating in service of a communist takeover of the United States. So, you know, you have to put aside this kind of 2D narrative. And by the way, this isn't the mainstream right now. Don Jr. is tweeting out my work. This is very much in the center and in the focus of what's going to happen over the next few weeks.
Well, exactly. We talk about 34 days, but what about the 79 after that? Let's talk about the 79 days of hell. The Democrats say they know they're losing. They're going to contest. How does that unfold? What does that look like? That's tomorrow's news today.
Predictive programming all of this with that show House of Cards a few years ago to try to get people into the mind that it's somehow glamorous that these corrupt politicians are doing these backroom deals and trying to subvert democracy and whatnot. So I think it was all leading up to this. And what we're seeing right now is a situation where, look, President Donald Trump is the head of state. He is the commander in chief of the military. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs has said that he doesn't believe it's the military's role to intercede in an election and drag Trump out of office. If the Democrats don't recognize Trump's victory, then I believe that they are the ones who are seceding. I believe that they're the ones who are rebelling against stability. And so, you know, I would treat them as the Confederates in the sense that, you know, there's going to be a big question.
By the way, Podesta says they're in the role of Confederates. And so what's incredible is history's repeating itself again with different players. But just like we had eugenics come up in the 1920s and forced inoculations and sterilization, it's back again, too. It's like everything's coming back.
Right. Well, we hope that peace holds up, but obviously we haven't seen peace coming from Black Lives Matter and Antifa. They will have their riot squads ready to go. They will be intimidating people. They'll be intimidating people outside of the polls on election day because the Trump voters are going to show up in person because obviously we don't trust vote by mail. When we see, you know, ballots in a ditch in Wisconsin, when we see the military ballots being tampered with and discarded in the state of Pennsylvania. So, you know, they will have the riot squads ready to go. They did this mask thing right before Antifa started rampaging around the country. And by the way, the masks, we got a little kid now who has a rash on his face with masks. There have been multiple kids in this world who have died in gym class wearing a mask on their face. So they are demoralizing us. They're trying to depress us.
They're trying to suffocate us. They're literally like a psycho puts a ball gag in your mouth.
Yep, and they're trying to send the message that, you know, if we feel bad about ourselves, if we feel demoralized, then we're not going to have the ability to fight back against them peacefully or to represent our own interests when they try to take the whole country away from us. And we're only days away from
that. The lockdown is about us already being locked up when they then bring in their own martial law. I don't think it's going to work, Patrick.
We're in a training session for the new world order. That no doubt about it. And what Alex and Patrick Howley just set out was very, very insightful. We've got a short clip here, about 5 minutes, talking about Project Veritas, and Sean Hannity is interviewing James O'Keefe, who is a really stand-up guy. Here we go now with that.
All right, breaking tonight, a report. It should scare every American. It's about the integrity of our electoral process. A new video released undercover, Project Veritas, laying out evidence of ballot harvesting fraud, and in a local race in Congresswoman Omar's district in Minnesota. Now, what you're about to see is an apparent scheme where campaign workers would, if in fact this is proven, be illegally gathering ballots from the elderly and allegedly, we always believe in the presumption of innocence on this program, committing acts of voter fraud. Now, Fox News has not independently verified the contents of the video. We'll let you look and you can decide.
Numbers don't lie. Numbers don't lie. What did the gari wa buha wahas wa absent ballot salkayal? So we did. Really? Wahas orden? So we did. Wa buha gari wa buhayal.
There was video. You can see the video. There was a video out and about that he has the ballots in his car.
Right.
And talking about the only way you can win is with money. I was looking at them and they were not filled. They were blank.
Who is the one filling out the absentee ballots? People who work with, like in Han Omar, where do they pay the money?
The minute we sign the thing, the election, that's what you can do.
Money is everything. Money is the key in this world. If you ain't got money, you should not be here, period.
At the end of this street,
yes,
there's three towers called one tower.
Okay.
And it's all seniors, and they took every ballot.
Every ballot? They just take them from them?
Every single ballot. Knock on the door and say, your ballot's come, give it to me.
They don't even pay them for it. They just take it.
Now, we did reach out to Congresswoman Omar's office for comment. They downplayed the findings, saying it was, quote, coordinated right-wing campaign. But breaking tonight, the Minneapolis police, according to FoxNews.com, say they are investigating this alleged scheme, which is just one instance of alleged voter fraud around the country. For example, the Heritage Foundation. Well, they have chronicled 1,285 proven cases of voter fraud in America. Nearly 1,000 people convicted. Recently in New Jersey, one city councilman, three others charged in mail-in voter fraud schemes. Right here in New York, the New York Post did an interview with a Democratic operative who spent a career committing mail voter fraud. Here with reaction, he is the CEO, founder of Project Veritas, James O'Keefe. Welcome back, sir. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me on, Sean.
Look at my car. My car is full. He's talking about ballots. When do you get paid? You get paid after you fill out the ballot. That would seem pretty damning before my eyes, Mr. O'Keefe.
Yeah, this is, Sean, this is incontrovertible evidence. The first time we've ever actually seen the deed being done on tape. The media says there's no evidence. Even the director of the FBI last week said there's no evidence of voter fraud. Well, there you have it. It's a state crime. You can't even have more than three ballots in your possession in Minnesota. And it's a federal crime because this guy was going around residential buildings in Minneapolis, pressuring people for these ballots, taking them away from the elderly. Sean, this is the story that may change things. It's all on tape. They can no longer deny it.
Okay, now, we do know the Minneapolis Police Department is investigating this. Any reaction to that? Because, as you pointed out, just today, we got 300 for Jamal Osman. He said, I have 300 ballots in my car right now. Numbers don't lie. My car is full. All here are absentee ballots. That's what they're saying on tape.
Yeah, I mean, this is clearly a violation of the law. We reached out to the county attorney. They told us it was illegal, but it's not just the state law. It's the federal law. President Trump asked the U.S. attorneys to investigate, Sean. This is a violation of federal law to vote, filling out blank ballots, to pay people to vote. This is what the ballot harvesters were on tape in our video saying. They were told to vote for Ilhan Omar. This is an open secret in this Somali community in Minneapolis. No one has ever told the story because no one could get access to the community. But the people felt like they were victims. They felt like someone needed to tell their story. We gave them hidden cameras, and we recorded all these ballot harvesters, not just Liban, but other people on the tape, saying that they line people up, bring them into the polls, and vote for them. This is a systemic thing happening up there. And just this one guy in a car with 300 ballots, that was one day. So this is the first time we've ever seen this before, Sean, and people need to investigate.
And people can see the whole tape of themselves on ProjectVeritas.com, is it? People want to look at it?
Yeah, ProjectVeritas.com. Right. And if you're an insider, it's VeritasTips@ProtonMail.com. That's how we got the hidden camera in the community.
I hope the Attorney General of the United States is watching tonight and will watch that video. All right, James O'Keefe, thanks for sharing this important news. We need to get to the truth. We'll continue.
Finishing out this first hour is an interview that Alex had with Dr. Madej. and she's out of Atlanta, Georgia, and she goes back 5 years at meetings that she attended. Boy, it's eye-opening. Here we go now with Dr. Mahde and Alex.
All right, Dr. Mahde's here, Dr. Carrie Mahde. A lot of problems with Skype and phone. I'm thinking it probably is on purpose with the massive censorship. What do you make of the censorship doctors around the world and prestigious scientists have gone through trying to suppress what you have to say? That's unprecedented as well.
Well, I think we've always been censored, but now it's at an all-time high. You know, if you speak up, there are repercussions. You will be fired. You will be harassed. You'll be slandered. Or even worse than that. So it's not new. It's just heightened right now. And, you know, in my state of Georgia, I'm licensed. If you write the prescription for hydroxychloroquine, the pharmacist has the right to deny your prescription just because. They don't have to give a reason.
And I heard a record skip there. That's on record that you have the medical degree. You have the license. It's something you're allowed to prescribe. It's known as safe. It's an off-market drug. It's cheap. It's good. It's moral. It pushes zinc into the cells. But now Big Pharma's the god. They can say no to the doctor.
Exactly. They're also breaking their own federal laws, privacy laws that are being broken. But they're doing this all under the guise of the Emergency Preparedness Act. Well, what is actually happening? Because if you look at the data, this does not be an emergency act right now. It does not support an emergency act.
Exactly. It's doctors talking about the data they censor. Get into the real data about COVID. What is COVID from your research, and what are the real numbers?
Well, I mean, what are the numbers? They're actually very much manipulated and falsified. I mean, for instance, just the state of Florida, they found over 300 individual labs saying they had 100% of the cases positive when they were investigated, less than 10%. Don't tell me that was just a mistake, because over 300 is not a mistake. This has been replicated in other, you know, states as well. We're seeing that along with other things of just giving incentives to the hospitals and the doctors for having different diagnoses, putting COVID on the death certificate. They get more money, or from the discharge, get more money. I mean, come on. These are inflated numbers. So if you look at what's really happening, it's about on par with maybe the H1N1 flu season. Didn't declare a pandemic over that. So no, this we're not going by sound science and data. So what is going on here? And I believe it's really a bigger plan of having control over everybody. It's a world plan, not just one country. And a little story.
Doctor, stay there. We're going to come right back to Dr. Carrie Mahde on the other side at Dr. M-A-D-E-J. She's amazing, and it's great having her. I appreciate her staying late because she's had some Skype problems, or we have, or whatever the hell's going on. Hour number four is coming up. She'll leave us about 15 minutes. I'm going to blitz huge news, and then Dr. Nick Begich. Stay with us. Global governments had lost control. Nationalists and populists were getting elected. The UN director of the vaccine program said in December of last year, the front line's wobbly. Doctors say vaccines are hurting people, not helping. Started coming out that most of the polio on the planet was being caused by the polio vaccine. What were they going to do? Fail forward, too big to fail. Bring in the biggest global scare ever and watch the sheep line up. Bring in a global taxation system, a tracking system. Social credit score. Total surveillance and forced inoculations. Dr. Carrie Mahde is here with us. She's a medical doctor. This is a short segment, long segment, then she's going to leave us. You were getting into the big picture, other facets of this. Please continue.
Yeah. Yes, Alex. I just wanted to let your listeners know that my opinion is not coming just from research. I've actually attended meetings where control of people was discussed. And the one meeting I'd like to bring up briefly is a business owners meeting in Atlanta. And this meeting was talking about how to get more companies internationally to come to Atlanta, but they had problems with the behavior of the people in Atlanta, that they were too racist and they weren't amenable to different cultures. This is exactly what they said. So they had a plan. This is like about 5 years ago. They said they would introduce a health app, which is already downloaded on all our phones now. And in this health app, this would connect the person immediately to the cloud and give biometric data. So an example is, if somebody lied, they would know, the phone would know they're lying immediately because of the GPS, of course, but also their voice inflection would know that they're lying. There's an electrodermal analysis that would be on par with the police station. That would know they're lying. If they're drinking alcohol, the alcohol content would be immediately known what their level was, what medications they were on. Everything about this, would they would know. So if someone said, I'm at someone else's house, and they really weren't, the phone would automatically light up and buzz them saying, you're lying, you're lying. This was actually introduced at a business meeting in Atlanta 5 years ago. And they said if you could influence somebody's behavior by saying you're lying and then have repercussions for lying, you could instantly change the behavior of a population in an area within 30 days. So think about that. And that technology is what we're talking about right now with the 0606.
Karen, I want you to come back in the longer segment and recap this and talk about where it was and where it happened. Because here's the deal. They called the first internet, when they declassified it in 1962, the Intergalactic Communications Network. And a psychiatrist at DARPA, I'm sure you know this, came up with the idea to have terminal computers that are wireless with little handheld computers that monitor our physiology, our behavior. They surmised they would have instruments strong enough and miniaturize the future. I wonder where they got all these ideas. And that they would then be able to track everything we do in live time and study the stimuli they put out through the TVs, through the broadcast, with the handheld devices to track our behavior so they could tune us under the control of the system. And it sounds like that's what you just said.
Yes, this is a real plan. This is a real business owners meeting. And so this is my, alarm call to the world that they want to implement this, and Atlanta was one of the pilot cities.
Well, and that's why they've got alerts on our phones now and alerts on our TVs and alerts that are more and more and more, and messages and all the big tech watches your text messages or even censoring text messages now. They admit, this is all happening, isn't it?
It's very true. And there's so much more technology than, what we can go over on this segment. But it goes deeper down the rabbit hole, really. But we need to now stop. We have a window of opportunity where we can stop a horrible dystopian future for ourselves. And we have the power. We have the ability. If we just stood up for ourselves and said no and stand united, we could make this stop, because there's not that many of those people trying to control the rest of us.
All right. Dr. Monday, I'm going to try to reconnect on Skype, because what you just said is so powerful. It's so true. And I know the CIA and other globalist DARPA groups, through business groups, through executive groups, introduce what they're planning to roll out later so people feel like they're part of the inside. Just like we have all these off-camera videos, hot mics of Democrats going, we just wear the mask for theater to scare them. Come on, wear the mask. And so a lot of folks are in on this, too. It's incredible. We'll be back in 60 seconds. I want you, Doctor, to recap what you just said. That is amazing.
Resistance to tyrants is obedience to God. It's Alex Jones.
All right. What Dr. Carrie Monday said is absolutely on target. This is all social engineering. They admit that's what the cell phones are, is social controls that track us and control us, that are watching, listening to us in live time. The home assistants. Facebook has a plan where in the future they'll own big buildings along with Amazon that are like 200 square foot for each person. Even families are in communal areas where everybody spies on you, everybody tattles on you, and then they make you accept the new way of life. And you don't get credits on your digital card unless you sterilize your son or unless you, take certain nanotech. It's all about social score. You submit to big tech. You submit to big pharma. You let them put these things in you, and then you get to have a life, at least for a little while. They have so many robots, so many factories, so many computers. They can produce all the food, produce everything now. They don't need you anymore. But to get you to go along with it, they get you to acquiesce. And once you give into it, it's over. So doctor, recap what you said on your Skype's back about Atlanta 5 years ago, how you got brought into this, how it blew you away. I know the stuff you're talking about is very, very real. What they described as a allegory for people so that they would accept the social credit score coming in to the future. Again, her Skype just went down again. This is torturing me. But this, and then she was getting into, we'll just go phone then. She was getting into we have this window to say no now. This is the window. It's not, oh, just wear a mask for 15 days. Oh, just stay inside. No, I told you it would never end. Now CNN says it never goes back. You never stop masks. And there's going to be shots. And we'll decide on your app when you can go out, when you can drive. The Megapolis videos 10 years ago for children's TV in the UK said you'll be told by your phone when you can go out, when you can have meat, when you can have a job, when you can marry. You get meat once a year. This is a total societal takeover plan. And once they get you Pavlovianly to follow orders on something simple like a mask, everything else follows. So, Dr. Kerry Mauday, the time we've got here with you, recap what happened in Atlanta and then talk about that window of opportunity you just discussed.
Yes, just going back over, I'm not speaking just from a scientific background and researching. I also attended business meetings where the plan to control people was discussed. And it was a real plan with a timeline. And there were people in the big tech world, people that you might see on CNN, and small business owners. And they were serious about trying to modify and augment a group of individuals' behavior. So within a city, within a county, within a state, and perhaps, you know, bigger area than that. So they want to control what you say, what you think, how you behave, and you'd have repercussions. And this would be done through the smartphone, through the health app that you have. If you look on your health app, you'll find drop-downs. If you really look at subcategories, it tells you how many times you've had sex, how many brush your teeth, the medicines in your body, the illicit drugs in your body. Everything about you is known. Your emotions are known. So everything that you're doing would be transmitted to your cell phone, which would go into the cloud and some AI connection. And then if it wasn't the kind of behavior deemed worthy or good for society, for the good of the whole, there would be repercussions.
Doctor, continuing here, what was it like for you? Because I know the CIA, you're saying this is like through CNN, they really are like the deep, deep part of that. I know people that have actually been in similar meetings, lawyers, politicians, others. I actually ran into a high-level guy today that went ahead and told me a bunch of stuff because he's so freaked out. And, I mean, I guess you're a good-looking woman. You're a medical doctor. You're a smart person. Did you get invited to this to see if you'd buy into it, to see if you'd be a change agent for them? Why'd they invite you to this?
You know, I'm surprised that I was. And the person that really tried to get me to come, I finally went. I said, why would you ever invite me to that kind of a meeting? And they said, well, you'll soon see. It's either us or them. What side do you want to be on? And I said, well, I'll never be like you. I will never think like that. And I will never think that way of other people, of humanity. And I said, do you really think that you will be exempt from this technology? Because you won't. I said, you are foolish to believe. And as they discussed this plan, people were clapping and standing ovation. And I definitely was the black sheep there because I was in shock. I could not believe what they were suggesting and what the plan was. So my point to you is we have a window of opportunity here. And we have the power. The people have the power. We always have had the power. We are amazing, brilliant, spiritual beings. All we have to do is say no and stand up for ourselves and be united, not divided. And if we just say no to this tyranny, to this insanity, we can change our world for the better. We have the ability to have free energy. We have the ability for clean energy. We have cures for just about anything you can think of. We have it. So let's stand together and be united and stop this and stop the mess, stop the poor hands for the, not taking these experimental drugs and vaccines. Enough is enough. And this is my alarm back to the world.
Well, doctor, did they make you sign a non-disclosure? Because a non-disclosure doesn't cover criminal activity anyways. I mean, you should come back. Fly you here to Austin.
No, they did not make me sign it. What they did is jammed our phones, and we weren't allowed to leave the building, and we were bussed in. But I did not sign anything.
Well, no, that's how this actually works. You know, this happened to my dad. The plan wasn't as far along then, but he was top of his class when he was about 15, and he was already 15. He worked at MD Anderson and some stuff. And then as an assistant, and then he got advanced to Plan 2, University of Texas. And they brought him in on it to see only five other students in Texas at the time at that age were brought into that plan at UT. And it was pretty much the same thing. They had nuclear reactors nobody knew about. They had CD-ROMs back in the mid-60s. And they were basically telling my dad this. He decided not to be part of it. But They've recruited a lot of people to the technocracy to be the little minion overlords. And the idea is you get all this power of the breakaway civilization that's 10, 20 years ahead of us, 30 years. But the low-level folks get, you know, 5 years ahead, like they were doing for you. And I mean, this is evil. Is this not diabolical?
It is evil. And to me, we're not just battling on the physical realm. It's a spiritual battle, too. It's a battle for our minds, bodies, and souls. That is my belief. You know, after studying this and researching this and going to meetings, I mean, we are in a war. We are in a battle, and we need to stand up for ourselves. It doesn't have to be that hard. We wouldn't have to have that. It wouldn't be really so much force or violence if we just said no and stop. They need us to consent. So do not consent to this insanity. You know, let's stand up for ourselves and finally make this earth the paradise it was always supposed to be.
Thank you for listening. And we've got to continue to pray and hope that our president will pull through this all right. I think there's a concerted effort by the opponents to get rid of him. There was this conspiracy that's been documented now, and there's proof everywhere. It's just that our president attorney general doesn't want to destroy the FBI and Department of Justice, so they're slow peddling this. They're not advancing the prosecutions of these people, these guilty people that conspired against Trump. And it was a conspiracy, and it's evident now, and there's more and more evidence that's coming out all the time. And they thought that Hillary Clinton was a shoe-in for presidency, so they did things in the open too much. And now that the investigation is opening up, you could say, into areas that they never thought that would be opened up, the liabilities of their actions are becoming more and more evident. I'm just not very hopeful that we're going to see any prosecutions. Now, we're being trained to be part and to be peasants and to be, you could say, Marxist, communist, proletariat slaves to the New World Order. And we've got to wake up and stop this and put our foot down. Now, I'm going to fight with every fiber of quanta energy and the breath till my last breath to fight against this New World Order and to right all these wrongs. And I'm going to, until my last breath, until the day I die, I'm against that New World Order. And I'm going to stand up and fight with all my energies to right these wrongs that have been committed against the world citizens. World citizens out there need to wake up, and be counted, and start struggling and standing up against this tyranny that is being built right before our very eyes. And they want world communism for the lower classes, and they're going to be constructing a corporate fascist capstone with us being their little underlings. And we're disposable to these people. To them we're the downtrodden nothings. You know, there was a great author out of South America that wrote a little bit about nothings. And I put that up a while back, and I think I'm going to put that up against. He was adamantly against the imperialism in this world, so I can agree with him on that. But let's just hope and pray that President Trump comes through this. And let's come together and fight this New World Order and stop the building of this tyranny, and we want to stop the training that is going on also. Thank you for listening. God bless each and every one of you, and good night.